Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Sarah, and this is the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast. Hello, 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 everyone. Today, I have a really special guest. I know I say that every time because I really find all of my guests special and exciting. But today was actually kind of a fan moment for me because I've been a fan of Rabbi Manus Friedman for a very long time. I read his book, The Joy of Intimacy, back in 2021, and it totally opened my eyes to new perspectives about intimacy and relationships. And I just read his book, Creating a Life That Matters, which is what we discussed today on the podcast. And, you know, if you don't know who Rabbi Manus Friedman is, he is a really well-known in, especially in the Orthodox Jewish community, very well-known rabbi. But not only that, he's a relationship coach. He speaks about finding purpose. He has written various books that are extremely popular. He does many lectures and events and talks, and you know, he has a lot of wisdom to share. I am a huge mental health advocate, as anyone who's listening knows. And with being a mental health advocate, I think it's extremely important to invite different voices than what we're used to into the mental health conversation. Rabbi Manus Friedman is well known when it comes to deeper topics regarding life and purpose, as I mentioned. But, you know, a lot of you may be listening and may think, wow, this is a perspective I've never heard of before, or why would I want to listen to a rabbi because I'm not Jewish or I'm not observant? But I think sometimes it can surprise us when we listen to people who are totally different than us and have completely different life experiences. You know, I hope you listen with an open heart and an open mind. With that, I want to move into the sponsor of this podcast. As you may know, the sponsor of this podcast is BetterHelp. BetterHelp is an online therapy service that provides thousands of counselors, and you could start speaking to someone in under 48 hours. They're a really great service, and right now everything's pretty much online, so why not start therapy today? You can get 10% off your first month of service by going to betterhelp.com/itsfine. That's betterhelp.com/itsfine for 10% off your first month of service at BetterHelp. Again, friends, everyone knows I'm obsessed with therapy. I love it. Anyway, going into peak and pit of my week, I moved this week and it was so stressful. It was literally a horrible experience. I moved apartments, and it was just, the move took 5 hours. It was way more expensive than I anticipated. But my peak is that I moved and I'm in a new apartment and I love it. I'm so happy here. I'm not settled yet, but I absolutely love my new space and I'm extremely grateful for it. This is a longer episode than usual and I hope you enjoy. Rabbi Manus Friedman, thank you so much for being here. First of all, I am honored that you're here. And second of all, you are not just a rabbi, you are a relationship coach, dating coach. You speak on mental health and finding purpose in life, meaning in life. I just read your book. Well, I am halfway through it. Didn't want to lie. Creating a Life That Matters. And so before we actually dive into the topic of mental health, you are YouTube's most famous rabbi. I actually checked yesterday and you had 188,000 subscribers. And then I checked today and I saw you had 189,000 subscribers. So please tell us how you got into social media and what do you feel that people resonate with the most?
I think we're living in a time where the big issues, the big questions have become the questions. We've gotten past the petty stuff. We've gotten past the superficial stuff. Now the big issues, the major questions are on everybody's mind. And you can see this not only with Jewish content, but anybody who has some substantive information is becoming very, very popular. So the cheap entertainment, you know, the escapist fare, nobody's interested anymore as much. And what people are really interested in and really getting excited about and attracted to is the stuff that is really thoughtful, meaningful, central to life. So what are those things? Well, belief, God, family, morality, mortality. I tell you, there's one lecture. See, we have 180,000 subscribers, but listeners, there is one talk, one topic, one session that has over 8 million hits.
Wow.
Just that one lecture.
Wow.
And that is life after death.
That's very interesting.
So it is, it's a compliment to our generation that we're suddenly thinking deep thoughts. No, not being sarcastic or cynical. Even young children are asking deep questions. Like, what's really true? Why was I born? What am I here for? This is amazing stuff. And it's good news. I think that's why thoughtful topics are popular. If you can answer the big questions, people will listen.
So where do people go usually to find those answers? I know people turn to religion, but where can people go if they're asking themselves, what is my purpose? And they don't even know where to start.
Well, they know where not to look because they've been disappointed. They're not looking into religion. They haven't found any answers in religion. They're not looking into pop psychology because that has failed. I don't know if there is a and they're looking into the Bible. But without commitment to a religion, like Jordan Peterson, very popular, viral. And all he does is talk about heavy subjects. And he's a psychologist or psychotherapist. And a lot of biblical stuff. That and YouTube.
YouTube has all answers. Something you touched on in your book that I found very interesting was that people are focusing too much on existence versus living. That was pretty early on in the book. You mentioned that we're all so focused on existence, and existence can be painful and can be difficult, but living is just good. So how can we move? Can you expand further on that thought? And also, how do we focus on living?
Well, let's first get some definition.
Okay.
What is existence and what is living? Existence means literally occupying space. To exist is to occupy space. A book exists if it takes up space on the shelf. If it doesn't take up space, it is not there. It does not be. A stone takes up space. Thoughts take up space in your brain. You can't think two thoughts at the same time. Emotions take up space in the heart. The heart is full. Fire takes up space. Air takes up space. Because if it doesn't take up space, it does not exist in the three-dimensional world that we exist in. So the definition of existence is occupying space. Mm-hmm. Now, what does it mean to occupy space? You don't allow another into your space. One book doesn't allow another book. Air doesn't allow more air. Fire doesn't permit another fire because it uses up, sucks up all the oxygen. A human being finds existence a little embarrassing and a little depressing. Mm-hmm. I take up space. You can't come into my house, this is my chair. You can't sit here, it's my place, it's yours. I mean, Cain and Abel couldn't share the space. In that case, it was planet Earth. They couldn't share planet Earth. That's the nature of existence. Anything that exists is intolerant of anything else that exists. In addition, if you're a biological creature, not only do you take up space, you also use up resources. A human being needs to eat and drink and have a building and a roof over his house, over his head, and he has to have support, and he has to have friends, and just on and on and on, just to continue existing. So existence is embarrassing because it's so childish to take up space. And then it's a little depressing because it's so demanding. I need more food. I need more drink. I need more warmth. I need more cooling. It's just a heavy weight that is a constant demand. And it's a little depressing. If you put more energy into existing, if you put more thought into existing and more concern, you're making the existence heavier and more depressing. Mm-hmm. Life, on the other hand, is the opposite. Life makes no demands. Life offers opportunity. Life means the difference that you make by existing. The contribution that your existence brings, that's your life. So fire contributes warmth and light, among other things. Water contributes coolness and helps things grow. A stone contributes stability. A house made out of stone is more stable than a house made out of straw. Mm-hmm. Those would be the life of the fire, the water, the stone. So everything that exists also has a life. For the human being, life is the opportunity to make a difference. And that kind of justifies my existence. Mm-hmm. So almost every question that we've had in history can be answered by this simple distinction. Like, for example, a teenager who is very upset, very angry, very frustrated and resentful because her mother ruined her whole life. That's upsetting, but it isn't true. A mother does not ruin your life. Life means the opportunity to make a difference. How can anybody ruin that? Mm-hmm. So if your mother is difficult, okay, so what can you do to make a difference? If your mother is overindulgent, what can you do to make a difference? That's life. Mm-hmm. What a mother does do is a mother diminishes your existence. You don't have a space of your own. You can't tell your mother, don't come into my room. Mm-hmm. because it's her room. So your existence as a child living at home is very minimal. What is your space? What's yours? Your shoes are not yours. Your clothing or your phone is not yours. Nothing is yours. So your existence is barely recognizable. Mothers do that. They take all the arrogance out of your existence because whatever you have is really hers. But she does not ruin your life. In fact, nothing can ruin a life. What gets ruined is your existence. This is really important in terms of emotional health. Any failure, any damage, any negativity, any flaw that you find in yourself is only in your existence. It hasn't affected your life at all. So I was speaking, for example, to prisoners, inmates at a federal penitentiary. And I made this distinction.
Right.
If you're in jail, is your life ruined? No. How does that affect life? Jail affects your existence. You don't have a place of your own. You don't have all your existence needs. So your existence is miserable. But your life, whatever you make of it, prison can't affect that. Prison is just another place in which you can make a difference. The effect that that had on these prisoners was unbelievable.
Wow.
They had a life.
What can they do? Sorry, yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, what can they do? So in that, let's say there's a prisoner and he or she is feeling depressed and he feels like, my existence has been ruined and I don't know how to find purpose here. So you would say that in order to make the most out of his life, he would try to make a difference by helping others or doing what he can to fulfill a purpose in this space, no matter where he is.
Exactly. And no one can stop him. Mm-hmm. You can't stop a person from life. You can arrest their existence. You can deprive them of food. You can deprive them of water, of a roof over their head. Mm-hmm. You can't deprive them of goodness. You can't.
Mm-hmm. It's a choice.
It's an opportunity. Opportunity. So all of a sudden, these people who thought that their lives were worthless suddenly realized that life can never be worthless. Mm-hmm. Only your existence can be painful or degrading or miserable. Mm-hmm. So people who think that by killing themselves, they are solving their life problems, no, they're just solving their existence problems. They don't take up space anymore once they're dead. Mm-hmm. So what changed? Only their existence. In fact, that is the definition of death. Jesus. Death doesn't mean a life ends, because life can't end. It means your existence ended. Now you're free to live without need for existence. So, if we want to be healthy, we have to have this distinction very clearly in our heads. What's the purpose of life? Now, don't do that to yourself. The question is, what is the purpose of existence? Existence is embarrassing, so we're always trying to justify it. Life is not embarrassing. It doesn't need to be justified. It's self-justifying. So the more difference you make in the world, the more your existence is justified. You are now entitled to take up some space because you do good. Mm-hmm. So nobody ever gives up on life because their existence is difficult. If you should ever have to choose between living and existing, of course you choose life. What would you want more existence for? It's only depressing.
Right.
So in a relationship, like marriage, for example, mm-hmm. your existence is devastated. It takes a big hit. Nothing deprives you of your existence more than marriage. Mm-hmm. It's not like prison. It's worse. But it's all worth it because together you can make a life.
What if that person is making your existence? Well, as you're saying, they most likely will make, they will make your existence harder. So yes. How would someone who's struggling so hard with their existence say, I'm going to now enjoy life as opposed to focusing on my existence? If you're so in that pain and you're struggling to get out of that headspace of like, my life is, or my existence is so hard, everything is so hard, why me, why is this happening to me? Because I know a lot of us have been there. How can we step out of that space and say, I have an opportunity to live my life? If we're so kind of like, especially when we repeat to ourselves, like, my life is so hard, my life is so hard, my life is so hard, we're adding to the belief that life is worthless. So how do we step out of the existence is hard, but life is wonderful and I'm going to make it wonderful?
Well, the first thing is what we're talking about. Don't confuse life and existence. Existence is depressing. You're worried about it? More depressing. You give all your energy to making your existence better? Even more depressing. Mm-hmm. We don't exist to exist. That's something we are discovering, which is really revolutionary. I don't think it's ever happened before in history, human history. We don't want to exist in order to exist. Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. So when a kid says, I didn't ask to be born, why do I have to clean up a room?
Right.
That is such a good question. The kid is not depressed. He's precocious. Mm-hmm. He is asking questions that great philosophers used to struggle with. I didn't ask to be born. Why do I have to go to school? Well, because you have to get an education. Why do I have to get an education? Well, because you got to get a job. Why do I have to get a job? Because you got to buy a house. Why do I have to buy a house? Because without it, you might die. Uh-huh. So I should do all of that in order not to die. And if I don't die, what have I achieved? Nothing.
And it's all about existence.
Right. And what does existence mean? Existence means I have what to eat, I have what to drink, and I am safe. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I can do it again tomorrow.
Right. That's actually very sad when you put it that way.
But that's what it is.
Yeah, it's very sad.
That's why we're so affluent, but so depressed. So you're asking, what do you do when your existence is so burdensome? Mm-hmm. And you think that that means your life is bad. So the first thing is, don't confuse life with existence. Mm-hmm. And secondly, don't take existence so seriously. It's not that valuable. And that's why we've always asked, why are we here? Why is that question so common? It's because any human being with a bit of self-respect finds their own existence embarrassing. That's it. I'm here. Give me, give me. Mm-hmm. That is so embarrassing. Mm-hmm. So we keep asking, come on, there's got to be some justification, right? There's a reason. There's a purpose. Tell me there's a purpose. Otherwise, I can't stand it. That's a compliment to the human being. I actually did this. I'm embarrassed to admit it, but a brash young man, when I first started teaching, and this woman came over to me and said, I'm going to kill myself. She had it all planned out. She knew the bridge she was going to go to, and she was going to jump off the bridge. Wow. Why? Because it's all meaningless. It's all meaningless. There's no meaning to anything. It's meaningless. I said, really? Nothing really matters. It's all meaningless? She says, yeah. I said, so why do you have to kill yourself? Just sit quietly, get old, and you'll die. Why are you so ambitious with the plan to kill yourself when it's all meaningless anyway? Because if I was a professional psychologist or psychiatrist, I would lose my license right there. But I wasn't professional, so. And I realized that this was not a funny question.
Right.
Why are we so intolerant of our existence when we can't get a life? That's what she's saying. I don't have a life. All I have is existence. Existence is meaningless. So exist meaninglessly. Oh, no. The human being cannot handle that. To exist without a purpose, that goes against the grain of humanity. Mm-hmm. That's a compliment to the human being.
Yeah.
So to confuse it and say, what's the purpose of life? Life is so meaningless. God forbid. A minute of life has infinite value and is sacred. We never dismiss life. Meaningless is existence. So when you say, why do we exist? That's a good question. The answer is, to live. Mm-hmm. To life, l'chaim.
L'chaim. Thank you. I do want to touch on another point you made in the book, which actually kind of ties into what you said. When we think too much about existence, and I know a lot of us tend to analyze, am I happy? What am I doing? And one point you made in the book was that therapists or psychologists sometimes place too much focus on where did this stem from? Where did this issue, what's the root of the issue? And I know even myself, I'm guilty of always trying to analyze why I feel. I'm a very analytical person. So every time I feel something, I'm like, where is this coming from? Why do I feel this way? But in your book, you said that we don't need analysis. We need empathy. So can you tell me more a little bit about why we need less analysis and more empathy? And do you think it's a problem that we're all trying to find the root of our issues and then we're able to just place blame on those things instead of, I mean, you know, perhaps I just answered my own question, but I would love to hear what you have to say about when we find the root of our issues, even if we're right, it feels that sometimes we then find ourselves in a pattern of saying, okay, well, this is where it comes from. So we feel like we did something about it, but in fact, we're just saying where it came from, but not actually changing our behavior. So would love to hear your thoughts about that.
It doesn't go far enough. Hmm. It's like, why am I so insecure? Because my mother never supported me and was never protected me. So I'm insecure. Okay. Why did your mother do that? Her mother. Get back to the original problem. Don't stop halfway. Why is it that you need to be given a sense of security by your mother? Why is that? Those questions seem to be a dead end, because how am I supposed to know? Like, why is nature what it is? I don't know. Okay, here's the real futuristic picture of our mental health. The world is going to become perfected and realize or achieve its potential at any moment. What is a perfect world? And how is it going to happen? Here's the picture.
Okay.
We try to comfort ourselves and strengthen ourselves by saying things like, don't sweat the small stuff. When I first heard that as a teenager, I thought, that is really, really, that's important. That's so true, so true. Mm-hmm. Then I heard somebody embellish on it. Don't sweat the small stuff, and it's all small stuff. Mm. Yeah. Okay, we're getting deeper here. Mm-hmm. So don't sweat the small stuff. Of course, of course. Don't agonize and don't torture yourself over things that are not important. What is important? Well, you have to take care of your needs. Those are not negotiable. Everything else is negotiable. You should be so grateful that you can breathe, that you can see, that you can hear. These are such blessings. Yeah, okay, cut it out. You take those things for granted. And that's fine, because that's normal life.
Right.
You can't walk around and say, oh my God, I can see. Don't do that. The issue is not that you can see. The issue is that you need to see. And you need to hear. And you need to speak. And you need to eat. And you need to travel. And you need a house. And you need a car. And you need friends. And you need love. And it just goes on and on endlessly. Just when you feel like you've satisfied one need, 10 new ones pop up. And sometimes by going to therapy, because you have too many needs, you discover more needs. So the question really is, am I needy? If I am needy, I want to quit. I'm out of here. Whether I can achieve those needs, fulfill those needs, or I can't fulfill those needs, either way, I don't want to be needy. I don't need this. What don't you need? Needs. I don't need needs. So, religion, philosophy says, you know, you have to abandon some of your needs. Nobody can have everything. So you got to give up a little and be a little more flexible. Don't be so rigid. Yes, you need to eat. It doesn't have to be right now. You can skip a meal once in a while. It's not going to kill you. So lighten up with the needs. That's what it means. Don't sweat the small stuff. Don't take your needs so seriously. So nobody loves you. Okay, maybe tomorrow. No, but I need love. Yeah, you do, but don't get so intense or sanctimonious or self-righteous. Nobody loves me. So what? Well, everybody needs love. Yes. Doesn't mean you need to be loved every minute of the day. You don't have to eat every minute of the day. That's how we used to think. Mm-hmm. Now here's the futuristic picture. The human being who says, I need to eat, is confused. Because you don't need to eat. You have no needs, in fact. I need to eat is simply not correct. The I does not need to eat. I need to stop eating. Or better yet, I need to stop being dependent on food. I hate this handicap. I'm busy with a very exciting project. I'm having a great time. I have to quit and go eat. Like children. When you call them in for supper, oh, do I have to? We don't want to eat, but we have no choice. So how can I claim that to be my need? I need this like a hole in the head. I don't need to eat. I don't need to drink. I don't need a house, and I don't need love. But I can't exist without them. So instead of calling them needs, I call them handicaps. And I didn't handicap myself. So why can't I go without food? I don't know. Why can't I go without drink? A camel can. But I can't. Why? I don't know. I wasn't consulted. I was created this way. Follow the dots here. I was created this way. So it's not my need. And whose need is it? I am dependent on food, and it's not my choice or my need. So whose is it? How is it, and why is it, that I am dependent on food? It's a little degrading, you know, because animals are also dependent on food. And sometimes it's the same food. And I have to fight with the rabbit to get the carrots before the rabbit gets it. It's pretty degrading. Who did this to me? Well, whoever created me. So listen to this amazing, amazing insight. I don't need to eat. My creator needs me to eat. It's not mine. So what do I need? Nothing. Nothing. So if you really want to go into the subconscious, the preconscious, the real essential me, don't stop at the repressed emotions. Go a little deeper. Beyond your repressed needs and emotions, there is a freedom where you need nothing. Why? Because you didn't ask to be born. Let me give you a really good illustration here. A teenage boy goes off to yeshiva overseas. When he arrives at the yeshiva, he goes directly into the office and he asks the dean for a telephone, because he has to call his mother. And he goes and he says, I have to call my mother. Which phone can I use? And the dean said, I have to? The boy said, yeah, I have to call my mother. The dean said, I have to? In Yiddish, of course.
Right.
So the boy realized what the dean was saying, and he said, no, no, no. My mother needs me to call her. Which phone can I use? And the dean said, good. Let that be your first lesson. Wow. Does a teenage boy need to call his mother?
No.
He's having an adventure. He's overseas. He's flying around. He does not need to call his mother. Does his mother need him to call? Yeah, she's been sitting by the phone for an hour now.
Worried sick.
So let's stay honest. I need to eat? What is this, my idea? Did I create myself this way? Did I choose this? Did I even agree to this? How is it mine? It's not my need. It was imposed on me by a force that doesn't ask questions. So whose need is it? Human beings have no business being needy. Why? Here's the punchline. I don't need to eat because I don't need to exist. I've never heard anyone who doesn't exist complain. So I don't need to exist. That's why I don't ask. I didn't ask to be born because I don't need to. Then why am I here? See, now we're getting somewhere. Mm-hmm. We're getting down to the basics. Don't tell me I need to go to school because otherwise I'm going to die. Where's the punchline? Yeah, so I'll die. So? Oh, that's scary. Come on. You live because you're afraid to die? That's not a way to live. So, if you create the universe, you're entitled to a need. If you didn't create anything, where do you come off being needy? It is so empowering. It's so liberating. You can't threaten me anymore. The worst that can happen is that I'll stop existing. Who cares? And I'm not suicidal, and I don't want to die. I love living. But don't tell me I need it. I don't need it. On the other hand, whoever created the world obviously has a need. How do you get around that? God created heaven and earth, but he doesn't need it. What is that? That's nonsense. You don't create a universe that you don't need. So, need is the privilege of a creator. If you built the house, then you have needs, and whatever you need should be done because it's your house, your project, your creation. When you're a guest in someone's house, you don't have needs. So what it does is it liberates me from the me monster. Mm-hmm. You're talking about me? Me doesn't need nothing. Me not need nothing. So as far as I'm concerned, being here, not being here, what do I care? So the big threat of death, gone. Did you notice that among young people today, death is not a threat?
Do you think that mental health has gotten worse or has gotten better? Because
much
Much worse. I agree. And why? Mental health 30, 40 years ago, we weren't really speaking about mental health. It was kind of taboo to speak about how we were feeling and really delving into, I wouldn't say emotions, but people weren't openly saying I'm depressed or I'm anxious. So why has mental health gotten so much worse? And why are we, you know, I personally do believe that we should hold space for people to express themselves, because I do think that expression is important. I think that when people suppress themselves, they feel trapped sometimes. But there's always a balance that sometimes when we, and I mentioned this earlier, but when we say, when we give too much weight to the negative emotions, it's hard to climb out of those negative emotions. And so why has mental health gotten worse, and how do we stop it from glamorizing the negativity and glamorizing the depression and the anxiety? And again, this is coming from someone who I do believe in talking about it, but sometimes it feels like we are glamorizing it. And the younger generation is, sometimes they want to be involved in the mental health conversation, which is important, but you know, how do we stop this from getting worse is essentially what I'm saying.
Well, I think the key difference is you should be completely free to express all your emotions, but you should never need to. You can say whatever you want, you can express whatever you want, wherever, however, but the need to express it, more depression. Another need on top of everything else. Now I need to be more expressive. Now I need to be more confident. Now I need to be more actualized. Now I need to... Don't do this to me. The Torah says it is not good to be alone. Really? What is the most common phrase you hear in people today?
I'm alone.
Leave me alone.
Oh, leave me alone. Okay.
Just leave me alone. Leave me alone. Wait, oh, it's not good to be alone. Mm-hmm. So is it or isn't it? Leave me alone doesn't mean abandon me. Leave me alone means leave the me out of it. Stop with the me. It's crushing me. It's too heavy. Depression comes from too much me. Too much need. And need gets heavy when you take it so personal. But I'm not getting what I need. How come everybody else has an I? Why me? Don't do that. The me obsession is the fruit of the tree of knowledge. It is a very good thing to have a sense of self. And it's the worst thing in the world. Mm-hmm. Self-conscious? Is that good? If you're self-conscious, you're awkward, you're uncomfortable, you're miserable, you have to compensate, you have to... But then again, if you're not self-conscious, you're not intelligent.
Right.
So is it a good thing to be self-conscious or is it a bad thing? The answer is yes.
It's a bad thing or it's a good thing?
Yes. It is the best of things and it is the worst of things. Hmm. That's why the tree of knowledge is called the tree of knowledge, good and evil. The knowledge, the self-knowledge, is good and it's evil. What we're trying to do throughout all of history is to keep the good part and get rid of the bad part. That's mental health. Hmm. Have a healthy sense of self without the me monster. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what is a healthy sense of self? That's been the question for all the years since Freud, or before Freud. What is a healthy self? The answer is a self that you don't care about. It is whatever it is. Who cares? So high self-image or low self-image, which is better?
High. Neither.
Neither.
Both. Oh, neither.
Which is better? It's self either way. And if you're focused on self, whether you're complimenting yourself or tearing yourself down, too much self. That's depressing. So what's our escape? How do we get past ourselves? So the conventional wisdom is find somebody who has bigger needs than you. And compared to that person's needs, you're doing fine. And devote yourself to helping that other person. Mm-hmm. That will get you out of your depression. That's good. That works every time. But that doesn't stop you from falling into depression.
Right.
What is the ultimate cure? The ultimate cure is you don't have to look for someone who has bigger needs than you because you don't have any needs. Get that out of your head. You have no needs. You need to eat? Yeah, like a teenage boy needs to call his mother. You don't need it. It is needed of you. So here's the final punchline. A human being is not needy. A human being is needed. That is a double blessing. First of all, I got nothing to be depressed about because I don't need anything. I don't care. But the Creator needs me? Hey, now we're partying. Now it's a bar mitzvah. You know what I mean? I have no needs, but I am necessary. Bring it on. Life is getting excited. Mm-hmm. I am needed by the Creator, and I have no needs. That's Judaism 101. And that should be our message to the world. You're not needy. Get off your knees. God needs you. That's why you're here. You're not here because you need. You need is just a depressing thought because it's so untrue. So when a person feels needy, he's going to get depressed because it goes against the grain. You are not needy. It's insane to think you need. So talk about mental health, right? Mm-hmm. Now we've gotten to a real serious definition.
Yes.
You are mentally healthy when you understand that you don't need any of this. You don't need to be born. You don't need to live. You don't need to die. You don't need any of it. And that's why you don't ask for it. On the other hand, you are indispensable. Wow. Mm-hmm. Not only have I no reason to be depressed, I have a very good reason to celebrate because I am indispensable to the Creator. Now we're partying.
Absolutely. Rabbi, this might be an unconventional question, but how did you get to a place where you feel like where you understand these philosophies or these thoughts? How did you get to this place and live your life in this way? Because was it taught to you at a young age, or was this just a a lot of learning over the years. Like, you're obviously well known to speak on the on meaning, and you're very good at it. And so how did you get there? How did you learn about this?
It's everywhere in the Torah, just under the surface. And God said to the Jewish people, I created the world in 6 days and I rested on the seventh. So rest on the seventh day. Keep it holy. I don't know. Wait. He created the world in 6 days and he rested on the seventh. What has that got to do with me? I didn't create the world, so I shouldn't rest on the seventh. So what is the connection here? Just beneath the surface. Is God saying that I need to rest on the seventh day? Because that's what religion says. Religion says you need this. I need this. I created the world in 6 days. No, you need this in order to get to heaven. Who says I want to go to heaven? Heaven is not mentioned in the Ten Commandments. It says I should keep Shabbos. It doesn't say I'm going to go to heaven. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't say that I'm going to go to hell if I don't. So why should I keep Shabbos? It is so obvious once you see it. God says, I created the world in 6 days, and to me, the seventh day is special. Keep it with me. Not you need, I need. I need you to keep the Shabbos with me. So when I'm keeping Shabbos, join me. During the 6 days I'm busy creating the world, join me. Be creative. On the seventh day I rest from being creative, do it with me. So God is actually saying, I need you to be on the same page with me. Not you need this. Even the language. Observe my Shabbos. And so it is with all the commandments. Every commandment God gives us is because that's what he does, that's what he prefers, that's what he needs, and he wants us to be there with him. That's a creator with a purpose. How did I, who didn't ask to be born, end up needing religion? Oh, you need to do this. No, I don't need to do anything. I don't even need to be. So I realized this very clearly when I first started teaching Chassidus, Tanya, to young college students back in the 70s. And their most common question was, why would I need to do that? What do I need that for? And I realized that I have no answer. This was the first generation, I think, to whom Judaism was so foreign because their grandparents were not observant. So you couldn't say, you know how your grandmother used to light Shabbos candles? No. Mm-hmm. You remember going to the synagogue with your grandfather on Yom Kippur? No. And here I'm trying to convince them that they should be doing these things. And they're saying, why? What for? You can make some kind of an argument that it gives your life structure. It brings peace in the family if you eat a meal together on Shabbos. Okay, eat a meal together on Tuesday. And I realized they don't need it. And that whole concept of human beings having needs is bogus. I don't need. And I found it very liberating. On the other hand, if this is what God needs of me, that is much more compelling than if you don't do it, you'll go to hell. Mm-hmm. So we've turned the world upside down, and it looks better. I'm not the needy one. A creator has needs. A creation has none. Mm-hmm. I don't need to call my mother, but my mother needs me to call her. What is the difference? I need to call my mother? Okay, so go call your mother. What do you want from me? Your mother is waiting for you to call? I'll do everything to help you. Because I need is narcissism. You're going to do something because your mother needs? Oh, that's noble. Noble inspires everybody. Personal need? Well, go find a phone. Don't have everybody running around looking for a phone for you because you need to make a phone call. Mm-hmm. But if your poor mother is sitting there and waiting, yes, everybody will run to find you a phone. So, first and last time I ever asked my very wise mother, I came home from school and I said, Ma, what's for supper? I regretted it immediately because my mother said, food, you need to know what's for supper. So, real mental health means you are free of the me monster. And you are thrilled to be needed.
And what if someone doesn't believe that they're needed because they don't necessarily, let's say someone doesn't believe in God or someone doesn't believe in a higher power, and they say, no, who needs me? No one needs me. How do you get to the place where you believe that someone does need you? And not someone, I mean, the world needs you. The universe needs you.
I don't think we need a better argument or a better proof. If I'm not sure that I am needed, I cannot go on existing. That's human nature. What does that tell you? We need to be needed far more than we need to be loved, far more than we need to eat. Because if I don't think I'm needed, I will stop eating. And I don't care who loves me. If I make no difference, then I'm getting out of here. So parents raising their children purely on love are destroying their kids. The message is, we love you, we love you, everybody loves you, everybody loves, and the kid becomes suicidal. How come? A pet turtle thrives on love. A human being thrives on being needed. No love will make up for not being needed, because nobody wants to be a pet, a gerbil. A gerbil people love but don't need. A human being will not settle for being a pet. So if God loves you, That's why I should live? No, no deal. I'm not here for your entertainment. So the message has to be, you are essential, you are needed, you are indispensable. Like, without you, I don't know who I am. I'm so identified with you. I am your father. I'm a father. If you disappear, what am I? So even when I don't love you, you're absolutely necessary to who I am. The same with husband and wife. It's not how much you love your wife. It's how necessary she is in your life. Love is terrible. You can be in my life because I love you. That is narcissistic. My love justifies your existence. How disturbed is that? But my need for you, yes, that justifies existence. Because life means you're needed. Existence means you're needy. So when a person says, I need to be religious, not good news. I need money, I need to eat, I need friends, and I need God. Well, it's all bad news. I was introduced to this minister, Christian minister, and his first words to me were, do you accept the Savior? And he wasn't being antagonistic, he was just...
Right.
I said, actually, I'm not looking for a Savior. I'm not looking for a God who will serve me. I'm looking for a God that I can serve. And this man started to cry.
Wow.
He says, how come I never thought of that? God exists to help me? That doesn't fly. I'm here to serve him. That just makes sense all of a sudden. So we would much rather be needed than be needy. And that's the big choice in life today. Make a choice. You want to be needy and pursue those needs, or do you want to be needed and fulfill your purpose? No question. You want to exist or you want to live? No question. Live means I'm needed. Existence means I'm needy. So the Torah says, choose life. Choose being needed over being needy. That's mental health.
Shkoyach. Really, really appreciate you being here. Very insightful wisdom and, you know, more than I could have envisioned, but I'm definitely going to re-listen to this and think about it myself. So I appreciate you very much. Just as a reminder, Rabbi Manus Friedman has a book called Creating a Life That Matters, How to Live and Love with Meaning and Purpose, which I think we learned quite a lot about today. So Rabbi, thank you very, very much for being here. I really appreciate it, and I know you're very busy, so thank you for taking the time.
No. This is the only thing I'm busy with. So.
Thank you.
It's in perfectly. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So that was my episode with Rabbi Manus Friedman. As I mentioned, he wrote a book called Creating a Life That Matters, so don't forget to go check it out, as well as his other books, which are amazing. And I really hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, you can find me at Sarah L. Sassone, that's N like Nancy, on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, all the things. And the pod at It's Fine, I'm Fine Pod on Instagram, and It's Fine, I'm Fine PD on Twitter. I don't really tweet there or ever. But anyway, hope you enjoyed the episode. I'm really, really grateful that I was able to do this. And please don't hesitate to reach out with thoughts, comments, and questions. Thank you all so much for listening, and talk later. Bye.